Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today is Friday, February 6th, 2026. And if you're listening, you're probably part of the Eureka Business Group Network.
Right.
Which means you're not here for the 101 level intro to real estate.
No.
You want to know how the headlines from this week are actually going to impact cap rates and the deal flow right here in Dallas-Fort Worth?
And we have a very specific mission today. We are looking at a market that is sending just incredibly mixed signals.
Yeah.
You've got record high distress in office and, you know, legacy assets colliding head on with what I'd call a mature renaissance in retail. It is a bifurcated world.
Bifurcated is putting it mildly.
It is.
I was looking at the data this morning and it feels like we're living in two different economies, you know, depending on the asset class.
Completely.
So we're going to break this down into three pillars. We'll start with the retail reality check, specifically the divergent paths of Pizza Hut and Starbucks.
Which is really a story about unit economics, not just, you know, brand preference.
Exactly. Then we're bringing it home to the Texas powerhouse.
Mm.
We need to talk about why billions are flowing into Denton and Plano right now.
Mm-hmm.
And how TPG is making a very contrarian bet on Dallas office space.
And finally, we have to tackle the macro landscape. The refinancing wall isn't just a buzzword anymore. The keys are actually being handed back.
Yeah.
Plus, Amazon's $200 billion spending plan is effectively reshaping the entire industrial market.
Okay, let's get right into it. Section one, the state of retail. If you just scan the headlines on Monday, you saw that Pizza Hut is planning to shutter 250 U.S. restaurants.
Right, in the first half of 2026.
It's a headline that naturally, you know, spooks people.
It does. It gives you flashbacks to that retail apocalypse narrative from, what, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're holding retail assets, you really need to look at the P&L mechanism behind this. This isn't about people stopping eating pizza.
It's about how they're eating it. The locations Pizza Hut is targeting for closure, they aren't random. These are mostly the older, dine-in-focused red roof formats.
Precisely. Think about the unit economics of a, say, 3,000-square-foot dine-in restaurant versus a little delivery hub.
Huge difference.
And when you layer on the costs of third-party delivery Uber Eats, DoorDash taking their 15 to 30% cut, the margins on those legacy footprints just dissolve.
Right.
Yeah. Brands calls it network rationalization, which is, you know, corporate speak for these buildings are functionally obsolete for our margin structure.
And that stands in such stark contrast to the other big news of the week, Starbucks.
Yeah.
In the same breath that Pizza Hut is closing doors, Starbucks announced they're opening 400 net new company-operated stores.
And look at the physical footprint of those new Starbucks locations. They aren't building those old third places with endless couches anymore.
No.
They're building efficiency engines, drive-through heavy mobile order pickup designated.
Throughput.
They are optimizing for throughput per square foot.
So for the Eureka client listening who owns a strip center, the takeaway here is really about tenant quality and format fit.
Yes.
Retail is tight doesn't mean every tenant is safe.
No, it means the right tenants are expanding. And the backdrop for all this is the supply constraint we've been tracking since last year.
What are the numbers now?
Vacancy is sitting at roughly 4.2% generally, but for neighborhood retail, it's down to 2.6%.
2.6%, that is functionally zero vacancy.
It is.
You essentially have to wait for someone to go bankrupt to find a slot.
Which is exactly why the market absorbs these failures so fast. When Party City and Joann went under in 2025, that space didn't just sit there and rot.
No, it got backfilled.
Almost immediately. Because we basically stopped building new retail inventory back in 2009.
We've talked about this construction gap before. From, what, 2009 to 2024, completions averaged something like 0.5% of inventory annually.
Yeah. We're effectively 15 years behind on supply. That is the safety net for landlords right now. And it explains the capital flow. We saw that catalyzing signal late last year when Blackstone dropped $4 billion to acquire Retail Opportunity Investments Corp, ROIC.
I want to dig into that because Blackstone doesn't write $4 billion checks on a whim.
No, they don't.
They bought a massive portfolio of grocery-anchored centers. Why is that specific asset class the gold standard right now?
It all comes down to frequency of visit and recession resistance.
Okay.
In a high inflation world, people might skip a luxury purchase, but they are going to the grocery store 1.5 times a week.
Sure.
That foot traffic protects the inline tenants, the nail salons, the dry cleaners. It's a defensive moat around the cash flow.
And we're seeing that strategy trickle down to other institutional players this week. Asana Partners just picked up the Arboretum in Austin.
About 200,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And Asana is interesting because they're value-add players.
So they're not just parking cash.
No, they aren't just parking money. They're going to renovate and merchandise that center to drive rents. They see the upside because replacement costs are so high.
Speaking of replacement costs, that Chicago sale really caught my eye. A 690,000 square foot shopping center sold for $69
million. $100 a square foot.
You cannot build a shed in your backyard for $100 a foot right now.
Let alone a commercial center.
So the buyer is essentially getting the land and the structure for a fraction of what it would cost to replicate.
That is the arbitrage.
Mm-hmm.
With construction costs still elevated, partly due to the labor market and partly due to those tariffs on Canadian and Mexican materials we saw last year, the spread between buying old and building new has never been wider.
Yeah.
Smart Capital is hunting for those discounts.
Which brings us perfectly to the geography where building new is actually still happening, despite all the costs. Section 2, the Texas engine.
We always say Texas bucks a national trend, but the specific moves in DFW this week are aggressive even by our standards.
Let's start north and work our way down. Denton, a master plan project announced at $5.1 billion.
Yeah. That is not a typo.
Wow.
5.1 billion with 1.2 million square feet of commercial space. This is the classic donut effect in action.
Walk us through that. Why Denton? Why now?
Well, look at the pricing in Frisco and Plano. Land prices there have appreciated so much that the deal math is getting harder for these massive mixed-use projects.
Okay.
So developers are pushing the ring road further out. Denton offers the land basis to make a project of this scale work. And the demographics are already there. It's the next logical step in the northern expansion.
But that doesn't mean Plano is done. The news about AT&T this week is significant.
Very.
They won initial rezoning approval for a headquarters relocation campus.
This is a critical validation. You know, we talk a lot about tech and startups, but AT&T is a blue chip legacy titan. When they commit to a campus strategy in Plano, they are anchoring the local economy for another 20 years.
And the multiplier effect of that has to be huge.
It's massive. A corporate HQ brings thousands of employees who need lunch, who need daycare, who need gyms.
All the services.
It creates a blast radius of demand for retail service providers. If I'm a Eureka client looking for a strip center to buy, I'm looking at the 3-mile radius around that new AT&T site.
Now, let's pivot to the urban core, because this was the most surprising headline for me. TPG acquiring 5 office assets in the Harwood District.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about office distress in a minute, but TPG is generally considered smart money. Why are they buying Dallas office in 2026?
This is the flight to quality thesis being executed.
Okay.
TPG isn't buying a random glass box off the highway. They're buying Harwood Premier walkable amenitized districts. Their bet is that while 80% of office buildings are obsolete,
The top 20%
will capture 100% of the tenant demand.
So they're buying the best assets at a moment of sort of peak market fear.
Exactly. They're likely getting in at a basis that allows them to renovate and offer competitive rents while still hitting their yield.
A contrarian play.
It's a contrarian play. But in a market like Dallas, where return to office numbers are higher than the national average, it's a calculated risk.
However, we do have to look at the other side of the ledger. It's not all TPG buying trophies.
Not at all.
There was a report this week that Texas has over $800 million in troubled loans headed to foreclosure just in February.
That is the reality check. $800 million hitting the foreclosure pipeline in 1 month. And included in that is a Fannie Mae apartment foreclosure down in Galveston.
So what's the common denominator there? Is it bad real estate or is it just bad math?
In most cases right now, it's a broken capital stack.
Mm.
The building might be full, the rents might be flowing, but the loan was originated in 2021 at, say, 3.5% interest. Now it's maturing, and the new rate is 6.5% or 7%.
And the cash flow can't cover it.
The cash flow simply can't cover the new debt service.
And that leads us directly into our third pillar, the macro landscape. Because that broken capital stack, that's a national, even global problem. We are staring at the refinancing wall.
The refinance wall is the single biggest threat to the market this year. We're talking about $4.5 trillion in commercial property debt that needs to be refinanced.
I want to get technical on this for a second because our listeners are investors. It's not just that the rate is higher. It's the equity check, right?
That is the mechanism causing the pain. Let's say you bought a building for $10 million with an $8 million loan.
Okay.
Today, the bank appraises that building at $8 million because cap rates have expanded. They will only lend you maybe $5
million. So you have to write a check for $3 million in cash just to keep the building you already own.
Exactly. And that is the cash-in refinance. Many investors either don't have that liquidity or they look at the deal and say, good money after bad. No thanks.
That's when they hand back the keys.
That is when they hand back the keys.
And we are seeing that play out. Office CMBS delinquencies hit a new all-time high to start 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And the first U.S. bank failure of the year was linked to CRE exposure.
The banks are aggressively differentiating between winners and losers. If you have a high-performing asset, like the Brookfield Place refinance in Manhattan, $800 million, a huge deal banks are fighting to lend to you.
But if you're that Chicago office building we mentioned earlier,
you are sold for scrap value. That is the bifurcation. There is plenty of capital for the investable and zero capital for the obsolete.
Compounding the office issue is the political environment. We have to touch on the DOGE campaign, the Department of Government Efficiency.
This is a wild card. The push to terminate up to 7,500 federal office leases is creating massive uncertainty.
But usually a GSA lease, a government lease, is the gold standard. It's backed by the Treasury.
It used to be. Now, if you're a landlord with significant federal exposure, your risk profile just spiked.
Right.
It's not just about DC either.
Right.
Federal agencies have massive footprints in regional hubs. If those leases get canceled, it dumps millions of square feet of vacancy onto markets that are already struggling.
While the office market is contracting, another sector is just exploding in a way that feels almost like a sci-fi novel.
Yeah.
Amazon's capital expenditure guidance for 2026.
This was a jaw-dropper of the week. Amazon pegged its 2026 spending at roughly $200
billion. $200 billion. And that isn't for cardboard boxes.
No. A huge percentage of that is for digital infrastructure data centers to power the AI revolution.
But let's translate digital infrastructure into real estate terms. What are they actually buying?
They're buying power capacity. That is the new scarcity. Data centers are effectively the new industrial asset class.
Mm.
They compete for the same land as logistics warehouses, but their requirements are different. They need massive grid access.
I've heard people say that land with a substation connection is trading at a 3 or 4 times premium compared to land without it.
It is. We are seeing deals where the value is almost entirely in the power entitlement. If you look at the Stargate project announced last year, that $500 billion OpenAI venture, or Amazon's current push,
yeah,
they are consuming land and power at a rate the grid is struggling to support.
It really changes the map. Suddenly, rural land in Texas that happens to be near a major transmission line becomes prime real estate.
It does. And it creates a conflict. That same land is needed for the onshoring of manufacturing. So you have AI fighting with logistics, fighting with manufacturing for the same dirt.
Which drives land basis up.
Which, again, makes existing buildings more valuable.
So bringing this all together for the Eureka Business Group client, we've covered a lot of ground from Pizza Hut to Amazon. How do we synthesize this into a strategy?
I see three clear takeaways for the portfolio. Number one, retail is the safe harbor, but you must audit your tenant health.
Okay.
The macro data says retail is strong because no one is building it. But as we saw with Pizza Hut, you need to ensure your tenants are on the right side of the unit economic shift.
So look for service-oriented, grocery-anchored, or experiential tenants that can't be replaced by an app.
Correct. Takeaway number two. Texas is the engine, but the capital is the brake. The demand in Denton, Plano, and Dallas is real. The population growth is real.
But
if you're buying, you need to be very, very careful about your debt structure. The days of easy leverage are gone.
You need to have your equity lined up, and you need to be ready to navigate a market where distressed assets are hitting the auction block.
And finally, takeaway number three, digital is physical. Do not ignore the infrastructure trends.
Mm.
Whether you're holding industrial land or looking at office conversions, the demand for power and data capacity is the single biggest external force acting on real estate values today.
It really feels like we're in a moment of extreme separation. The market is sorting assets into winners and losers faster than I have ever seen.
That is the perfect way to frame it. And that leads to the question I would leave every listener with today.
What's that?
We talked about the refinance wall, the cash-in refinance. Look at your portfolio. If you had to refinance your key assets tomorrow, would the bank fight for your business like they did for Brookfield?
Or would they ask you to write a check you don't want to write?
That is the uncomfortable question. Are you holding an investable asset or an obsolete one?
The market is deciding that for you right now, whether you look at it or not.
If that question makes you nervous, or if you're looking at the opportunities in Denton or the retail gaps in DFW and want to execute, that is exactly what the brokerage team at Eureka Business Group is for.
They're on the ground. They know which corners are seeing rent growth and which ones are seeing foreclosure signs.
Don't navigate the bifurcation alone. Reach out to Eureka. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive, and we will see you next time.